you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the news.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher here with you on Wrestling Weekly. Got a big show tonight, and we're going to get right into it. On the line, Les, from Wrestling Observer, is David Meltzer. He's going to be doing our Hot Topic this week. Dave, thanks for being on the show.
No problem.
Yeah, we want to remind everybody, when we go off, you can also check out Wrestling Observer Live coming up. Who are your guests tonight, Dave?
Mike Tenay, first hour, and Mick Foley, second hour.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's going to be a good show tonight. I'm looking forward to it.
Good, very good. What's the hot topic over at the Observer?
The hot topic for today? God, it's just, I guess the Monday night thing is probably the biggest thing going on right now, and then just Vince's putting on that Loaded show a week from tomorrow.
Now, everybody's adding an extra 5 seconds here and 15 minutes there. do you think this could get to the point where you say, the hell with it, I don't want to see it, there's too much, I don't want to...
Well, there is too, seriously, nobody can watch that many hours. I counted 11 hours.
Right.
In one night. So, it's besides it being physically impossible, you know what I mean? So, you know, they, you know how these wars get, you know, everyone in TV, they play one-upsmanship, and they both one-up themselves... To the point where I think on both sides, they probably would have been better to cut the programming back about 2 hours and put on a show like CSI that's going to draw bigger numbers than the too many hours of what they're showing.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you know, and the other, they've got all these people signed. Hillbilly Jim's going to be there. Harley, God knows, there's a list as long as your arm. But also, in that period of time, none of these guys are going to get a lot of exposure either, so it's going to be like... cameo after cameo, and we probably won't see a lot of wrestling and get right down to it.
Well, they're talking about a Shawn Michaels 30-minute match with Kurt Angle, so we'll you know, if that happens, then we're going to see at least one great match.
Yes, exactly.
Piper's Pit with Mick Foley. I mean, to me, you know, it's like I think that WWE, it's like if they had done all of these things that they're going to do on Monday but spaced them out over 2 months, we'd have 2 months of good television, and they could actually make use of some of these guys. Instead of rushing so many people in and out to where, you know, they're really, you know, most of them aren't going to have an impact. I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, I'm sure Austin and Triple H and Foley and Hogan will have an impact.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't want to put all of them on the same show, because then what happens is your guys at the level of, Carlito, just as a name, Chris Masters, who've been like focal points of the show, they become like the number 12 and 13 guy on the show all of a sudden, because all these guys jump ahead of them, and it's like, you don't really need all those guys on one show, unless, you know, if it's the month before WrestleMania, it's one thing, but, you know, it's not like these guys are all coming up on a pay-per-view in a month.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And again, I just think with both stations, it's totally overkill. You know, it's just...
Oh, hours-wise, it's overkill. I mean, they got carried away. It's like, oh, you know, like, we need to start first, you know, so I guess Spike TV, you know, unless USA, you know, gives them another hour, Spike TV is going to start first. They are going to end last. I don't know if that's to their advantage, but they are.
Let me ask you this about both companies. I just noticed that Raven and Rhino and I forget who else are in a four-way on the October pay-per-view for TNA. And I think Raw and SmackDown both have been doing handicap matches and let's turn the single into a tag to the point
the same week.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Well, you know, and
they were taped on the same night. They did the same angle to start two shows on the same night with the same angle. I couldn't believe that.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It's like, well, we'll do it until we get it right.
I guess so.
You know, yeah, well, but you know, the thing with me, too, is like, I've told Doc this, if TNA doesn't do another multi, three-way, six-way, five-way, 20-way, whatever, for the till the, after the first year, I don't think it'll be a big problem. I mean, they're just going to burn that stuff. It's going to be like the hardcore matches and stuff. They're just going to burn it out.
You know, I generally speaking, I mean, they're, you know, some of them are good, but generally speaking, don't you think that, that when you do a match like that, that nobody ever gets over?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, that's my, because there's no focus on any person. It's just a focus on spot after spot after spot. And they're, you know, so I mean, I've seen ones that I like a lot, and like the three-way on the last one was tremendous. But as a general rule, man-on-man is what, you know, people can focus better on man-on-man.
Well, it's like team, like we're watching Pittsburgh, if you're watching Pittsburgh and the Patriots, right? It's the struggle for dominance. And that comes down to two guys, you as a challenger, me as a champion, or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gets really blurred once it goes to three and four and five and six way.
Well, I think that what happens is that they've gone in both cases to this thing where everybody wants to sign and stockpile talent, so to speak, and everybody has so much talent that they think needs to be on every television show. So to do that, you have to put a whole bunch of guys in one match. Or because you don't have enough time for enough matches, and I think that's one of the problems. TNA it, more than WWE with the 1 hour a week, and all those guys that they want to get over. I worry about them, you know, trying too much. I mean, I think that it might be a show that'll be. Well, I know it's going to be a show that's going to be fast paced. I just worry that it's going to be so fast paced that that they try to do too much in a show, and then when the show's over, you just kind of go like, you know, and like, you know what I mean. By those TV shows when you're watching at the end, and you go, you know, that was a good TV show, but I have no idea what I just saw for 2 hours. I don't remember any of it.
Oh, you know, that's, when I first started watching them on Fox on Friday afternoons, I've said this before. I said I came out at the end of that hour feeling like I'd just taken a couple hits of speed. You know, I'm just, you know, slow down, please. Let me absorb this. And, you know, and I think that's the key anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like they're trying to get it all out there. And they have such little time to do it.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. That's why I wish that they were taping 2 1-hour shows a week, because to me, that way, you know, a lot of people are going like, oh, they don't need it. But to me, it's like if they did the exact same number of angles but spread over two shows instead of one show, it's like they're going like, well, they don't have enough. And it's like, actually, they try to do too much.
Right.
If you did the same quantity of what they do, but you spread it out, everything that they do would have more impact.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I think that's the problem now, is it's getting into this one-upsmanship and the pissing contest, and the honestly, the fans don't win either, plus both offices end up throwing out all their bells and whistles, and like you say, you're seeing 16 weeks worth of programming in 3 hours.
Yeah, and for WWE, here's the other thing, too, it's like, from a purely, I mean, it's an ego game, for sure, it's a huge ego game, but on that Monday, they're getting paid... Whether the ratings are 3.5 or 6.0, they're getting paid the exact same amount of money. But the following Sunday on that pay-per-view, if 200,000 people buy or 300,000 people buy, that's a difference of millions and millions of dollars, but they're not focusing on that Sunday pay-per-view. I mean, what are people talking about? You know, the Monday Night Raw or the Batista-Eddie Guerrero match? No one's talking about Batista and Eddie Guerrero. And it's like, that's the money.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. You're really listening to Dave Meltzer right now on Wrestling Weekly. Dave, got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Les were talking about this earlier, and this is kind of a personal question. So, have you ever given any thought to stepping inside the ring?
Oh, no. It's not. I just never had that desire.
Mm-hmm.
I never had the desire to be a wrestler. I mean, I was, you know, the thing when I was a kid, I was always a writer about sports, and this just happened to be the, quote, sport that I fell into. I mean, if it wasn't this, I'd be a football writer, you know, because that's what I was doing before The Observer. I mean, I was always a lifelong fan. So, no, you know, in fact, I actually would have dreaded it, because it's like, when I was younger, I would watch these guys do these things, and I'd go, I could never do it. And to me, if I went and trained to be a wrestler, and I couldn't do it, but if I actually could, I think that it would probably hurt my fondness for the thing. Because to me, you know, when I watch these guys, it's like, man, I know I can't do anything that these guys do.
Right.
But you know, if they trained me for it and I could, then all of a sudden I'd be going like, my God, you know. You know, I'd still be impressed with Angle and Michaels. There's not too many people who are going to be able to do what they can do.
You think you'd see it from a whole different perspective?
You know, of course you see it. Every bit of experience that you have, you look at things from a different perspective. So sure, mm-hmm. you know, a little, yeah, absolutely. Les, tell me about Gene Stanley.
Tell you about. Well, you know, I worked with his brother. I never worked with Gene. Gene was one of the first images I saw as a kid. This would be late 40s, early 50s. It was really, you know, high profile on the TVs that came into Cincinnati out of New York. I never had the opportunity to wrestle him, but, yeah, I certainly remember him, the blonde hair and the Mr. America and the whole nine yards. I did get a chance to work with Steve, his brother, later in his career. But, he's just passed away, and... Wow, my heroes are dying now.
Oh, that's okay.
he lived a long life, though.
Yeah.
How
old was he, Dave?
He was 82.
82.
So it's not, I mean, it's sad when anyone passes away, but it's, you know, sometimes in wrestling when you hear someone, you know, I mean, but, you know, that's the other thing is, if you actually study, like, wrestling and all this, it's like the guys from your era, Les, a lot of them really didn't, and before, you know, a lot of them really did live to long age, to old ages. The phenomenon of the guys dying young is actually a fairly recent phenomenon.
Right.
I wanted to ask you if you could give us a sneak peek of what's going to be in the Wrestling Observer this week. That was my question from earlier.
I think a lot depends on what's happening over the next couple of days and tomorrow night. But, you know, I mean, we'll cover, you know, the Pride pay-per-view. We'll be covering... you know, the last word on the Monday thing, the Muhammad Hassan firing.
Hell yeah.
You know, more on the Daniel Puter firing, a lot on the developmental, Bobby Lashley coming up, talk a little bit about him and his background. You know, those are some huge show in Japan on October the 2nd from the Wrestle One organization.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny Kobashi in the U.S., he worked for Harley last night, and he's going to work for Ring of Honor this coming week, so... That's just some of the topics.
Good.
Lashley, my first visual, of course, sitting here looking at it from an inside view, is he's up too early.
Really?
I write about this I wrote about this week. To me, with WWE, this is the rule of thumb. If you have got a great body, they always call you up too early, whether it was Lesnar, who ended up, you know, progressing tremendously and turned into a great worker, but Les, you knew better than anyone, they called him up too early.
Yeah.
Chris Masters was called up too early. You know, a lot of these guys, and if you're a great wrestler like Dinsmore or Conway or those guys are sitting there forever. And, you know, and Conway actually has a great body, but he's not that, you know, 270-pound beast.
Right.
That's their MO, and I think Bobby Lashley can be a superstar, but, I mean... I would not have brought him up probably, I mean, maybe a year. I mean, he looked better than I expected because I think that Simon Dean did a great job with him. But, you know, I've seen him, I mean, I see him every week on OVW, and when I watch him, I don't see a guy who I think should be in WWE. And there are guys on that OVW TV that I see that I think should be.
Yeah, the thing that jumped off the page of me watching him on Friday night was his hesitancy.
That's
there was no flow, right?
Yeah, that's what he's like at OVW. But, you know, he's...
Yeah.
He's not had that much time. And, you know, I mean, the key for all these guys, because, like, Masters is another one. I think that Masters, you know, really was going to be something. But, you know, I think if they had kept him down there for, you know, two more years and brought him up, he could have been ready and a superstar from day one instead of trying to make him a superstar and the people sitting there, you know, the fans going, like, you know, he's not ready and we don't want him. And he gets that... You know, he kind of got a negative stigma coming in, and it wasn't his fault. He's a 22-year-old guy with, you know, a year or so at OVW or a little bit longer.
Yeah.
I mean, Les, you've trained guys. You know how long it takes. One year, you can't go 1 year to the big time.
No, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And most of these guys that are really getting, we talked about Dinsmore and Conway, those guys have been at it 6 years.
Yeah, that's the point. And those guys are ready.
Exactly.
But you know, I mean, I look at it and it's like they either bring the guys up too late because they don't have the look they want, or they see, oh my God, we love the look. We're gonna make a new Brock Lesnar. We're gonna make a new Bill Goldberg. Let's, you know, get this beast in there right now. And then, you know, like with Lashley, like, you know, if he goes in there with the wrong guy and the fans start seeing the hesitancy, the shine's gonna go off him. I mean, he had a great debut, but you know, I mean, yeah, he isn't ready.
No, not at all. In fact, that I don't think I went with Kennedy going over Ray, and the manner. I don't even think that was a good distraction.
Yeah.
I think it's too early for him to be beating somebody like Ray. I have no problem with him.
They love the guy because he can talk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can see he beat Booker and he's beating Booker T and Rey Mysterio, so you know they love him. Because they don't. Most new guys don't get that shot.
I was impressed when I first saw him. Then after I watched him over a few matches, and you know that's part of me too, as being a trainer, I pick things apart. But I start to see some weaknesses. I mean, he needs refinement too.
Oh, he wasn't ready. The thing that they saw with him is they watched him on TV and they saw his promos, and it was like, and his promos are ready.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what got him.
You
know,
if you transfer his promos into Master's body. And then roll in the work of Bob Conway.
You got it. Dave, we want to thank you for being
on
the
show. Yeah, then you do that and then you give them Chavo Guerrero's gimmick and they still wouldn't get over.
I told Doc, poor Chavo, poor Junior.
Yeah.
He's ridden a stick horse, he's been an Amway salesman, now he's a white guy.
Yeah.
His psychiatrist is getting rich off of him.
And I mean, can you imagine, you know, like the family he grew up in where they were all, you know, they were all stars because they were good wrestlers.
Right.
And then he comes along in this era, you know, and especially like with his father, who was, you know, one of the all-time legends.
Sure.
Actually, his grandfather, I should say, not his father.
Right.
But his father was a great wrestler, too. And so, you know, but I know with the Guerreros, they always had it drummed into their head, if you can, you know, from Gory Guerrero, that, you know, no, the business will always change, but if you can really go, you'll always have a place. And, Chavo's a good worker. And he can go, and you know, it's like this round peg that they're trying to fit into the square hole by you know, we got to do something with him, you know, with this gimmick, and they, you know, yeah, he's had some bad ones.
Yeah. Bless his heart.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll see you real soon.
The Observer website a plug and the show.
Yeah. Go to www.wrestlingobserver.com. We got news on all the morning, you know, the news every day. And info on how to subscribe to the newsletters up there, and you can listen on the website to our show, which starts at 8 p.m. Eastern, 8 to 10 every Sunday night. And yeah, we'll have Mick Foley and Mike Tenay on, so we'll talk about TNA and WWE.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks, David.
Okay, you guys have a great day.
You too, buddy.
Bye bye. Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Weekly. Les, he's a good guy. I can't believe I forgot my question right in front of him.
Oh, you're wearing too many hats, Doc.
I think so.
Tranquilize you. we'll try to talk through it.
Got a lot of good.
Let me say this to everyone in the chat.
Sure.
Don't distract Doc.
Yeah.
Don't send him over nude pictures or whatever it is that's creating this problem. Okay.
I just need to turn off this monitor during the show.
Dereliction of duty.
Yes.
That's why I sit in front of the television and not in front of the computer.
We've got a lot of good stuff coming up on the show tonight. We're gonna get into the news in a little bit. We're going to find out who won last week's pay-per-view prediction game. That's what I like to call it, Les.
Okay.
That's going to be the name of it.
I'm the electric gambler, call it whatever.
Also, of course, we've got Mick Foley coming up later in the show. Stick around. We're going to be back over the news of the week right after this on Wrestling Weekly.
We know you hate this part, but Wrestling Weekly will return after this short break.
Why are you doing this to me?
One more time, Doc Young, Les Thatcher, Wrestling Weekly. Thanks for being with us today. Got a lot of good news coming up. Did you hear, though, about Heat and Velocity, Les?
Well, they've got to continue production to fulfill overseas commitments.
Yes, but it says that the WWE has found a new home now for Heat and Velocity. It's WWE.com.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So they're going to run them on the web.
Yes, much like TNA's been doing with the Impact shows. WWE will be running streaming videos of Heat and Velocity on their website, so that clears all that up.
Right. Well, they can use those shows, I assume, too, as fresh shows on their 24/7 channel.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's not a lot of reach, but yeah, they could do that.
I mean, that's a possibility as well. Sure.
It seems to me that they had been having internet only matches for a while. I remember Big Vito had done one just a couple of weeks ago over at WWE.com. It was the only place you could get it. You know, it had the Velocity announcers and things like that.
Right.
And I think that was just a little test. you know, to see if people would go look at it. And I'm sure they're taking stats, but now Heat and Velocity both going to be on WWE.com.
So it's like you can go in and get them at any time you want, right?
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think they'll get more use out of it, honestly, probably that way anyway.
It could be.
You know?
Never know. Our good friend of the show, Terry Funk, he has an official website now. He's caught up with the rest of the world.
TerryFunk.net.
Yes.
Yes.
It's got merchandise, photo galleries, all that good stuff. The site's not completed yet, though, they say. But their plans to add more. They got the photo galleries up. They have, you can take a look at his book. You can buy the book there.
Speaking of books, in my hot little wet hands, I have a copy of the Professional Wrestler's Instruction to Workout Guide.
Yes.
Yes. Our book is finally, has been produced. We are with child.
How's it look?
Whatever.
How does it look, Les?
It looks okay. You know, I mean, it's nice. It's nice, you know. I mean, again, I can see ways we could have added something to it. But overall, I think, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's, you know.
Now, does this book just teach you the holds and things like that, or does
yeah,
it have...
Well, yeah, this demonstration, a whole bit, it talks about psychology. It talks about conditioning and, mm-hmm. You know, it's very fry. I mean, there's no... we make no bones. You can't buy this book and become a wrestler.
Right.
But it's if you are a serious fan, it'll give you a better understanding and hopefully a better appreciation of what it takes to actually perform at a high level in this industry. If you are I think anybody can learn from it. You know, I mean, somebody say, well, this guy's already working. He's been in the business 3 months or 3 years. Okay, well, you know, still, I think it's a lot about foundation, you know, how to sell yourself, how to get yourself over, how to get in shape, that you should be in shape, and you know, the psychology of the business. But again, it's not, you don't have to be totally, this is the first day I've ever come to wrestling school. You know, I think everybody can pick something up. There's over 100 years worth of experience there between the three of us, mm-hmm. you know. And so...
And Les, where can we get that book again?
Where are you in the law? you could pre-order. You can, well, it's not pre-order anymore. You can order it on Sports Publishing LLC. You can go to EPWT's website. It's there. It's on Matt Stryker's site, who is on the cover with Nigel McGuinness. In fact, there are models for all the moves and everything.
Cool.
And, yeah, so, you know.
I believe High Spots has it also.
They may have it already. I know it's been shipped. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as we, I think we're supposed to do some signings, and as we get those things are lined up, I'll fill you in on those too. But
cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited. You know, I sat down I got a copy came FedEx, and I stopped what I was doing, and I sat down, and I just, well, this is cool, man.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's cool. We're talking about authors when we were, for Mick, it's just probably old hat, but yeah, I thought it was.
Yeah, Mick's like, oh, my book's here.
Yeah.
I'll look at it later.
This is the sixth or seventh one, you know. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about it, and, you know, I think we can be proud of it.
Speaking of exciting, TNAWrestling.com announced yesterday that former UFC star Tito Ortiz is going to return to TNA after their Spike TV debut.
Okay.
Ortiz appeared several pay-per-views back as a special referee for AJ Styles versus Jeff Jarrett, and I guess TNA management was pretty impressed with his work ethic and his attitude. So Tito Ortiz returning to TNA.
Well, you know, I don't know if they plan to involve him in any actual storylines other than, you know, as enforcer referee or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it gives him a little rub from the UFC, and it's a little crossover, too.
Mm-hmm.
Considering they're both going to be on the same network now and everything.
Right.
You know, this whole thing is, you know, it's going to everybody's going to blow off all their big guns the first few weeks.
Yeah.
That is going to simmer, but then, you know, it's going to be, you know, on down the road where the tale's going to be told. I mean, I guess the numbers the first few weeks will tell something.
Right.
But you got to realize, some people who may not get locked in TNA will watch the first couple weeks just to find out. You know, then again, some may try UFC that haven't before. You know, of course, USA will expose Vince to a lot, you know, WWE to a lot of more homes, and they also, you know, maybe some new viewers who just haven't found Spike or don't even care.
Yeah, maybe some new crossover shows.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
USA was pretty good at doing that. And
but like Dave Meltzer said, too, you know, 10,000 hours is, I don't care, you know, it's just like you overeat too much of your favorite food, you can get sick on that, too. That's because it's your favorite. Doesn't mean you can't, you know, overdo it. So that's, you know, again, my only hope is that, you know, that it creates jobs for the boys. I think it's a healthy environment, and I think everybody needs to think, you know, about just upping their game in their in-ring product.
Absolutely. Austin Aries has been signed with TNA.
Good. They're going to sign, you know, they're going to sign a bunch of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I had a question from a fan earlier in the week who was said, you know, about the size obsession that WWE has with just big guys. And I said, well, you know, it's not WWE. It's the, you know, this country has a size obsession, as witnessed by the NFL and the NBA.
And my belly.
Huh?
And my belly.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, okay. But, you know, I mean, size, you know, you realize you're in your job of suspending people's disbelief. If you look like my 11-year-old grandson in that ring, then the illusion isn't that, you know, that can I whip you, can I fight you, is, well, if he's a bad boy, I'll turn him on my knee and spank him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so size has something to do with it.
Sure.
And performance. But, you know, I was a junior heavyweight, too. And the junior heavyweights in a lot of the territories took a, I mean, you know, if there was a title for that division, if there was a prominent number of those wrestlers in that territory, they still took a secondary, but they weren't treated like, you know, like they weren't spit on or anything. And yes, we smaller guys had to be able to work better than some of the big guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, I mean, you know, that goes back to kind of the Pete Rose thing too, right?
Yeah.
You have to be an overachiever if you're not blessed with, you know, Olympic 440 speed and, you know, the eye-hand coordination of Ted Williams and Babe Ruth. So, you know, a lot of it comes back to the way you work. So, anyway, I just, you know, size, yeah, size has got something to do with it. And I think the heavyweights in TNA are going to be important, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, I hope they don't shove the X Division down the new their new fans' throat to the point to where it's like, well, okay, well, let me see something else. You know, as you know, when everyone started doing hardcore matches and they became cartoon matches, and it got to the point like, who cared?
Mm.
You know, and that's the one cast off, I think, of competition of competitive deals like this. You know, promotional wars, call them whatever you like. Is that, you know, everybody tends to throw all the big guns out there, and then at some point, wow, what if we come up with something fresh?
Absolutely, so. Yeah. Have you been watching Surreal Life?
I've been watching the Surreal Life. I have seen it off and on, yes, and our friend Maven is going to be on it.
Yes, he's going to be on next season. I can't wait for that, because I like that show by itself anyway.
With Florence Henderson.
Yes, he's going to...
Mom Brady, right?
Yeah, Mom Brady.
All right.
The Jefferson Sherman Helmsley.
Well, he's going to be on there with some old-timers.
Oh, yeah. Poison guitarist CeCe DeVille, Tawny Catane, Alexis Arquette, Andrea Lowell, and Steve Harwell are all going to be the former celebrities that live in the same house for 2 weeks.
Right.
So that's going to be... I don't know when that season starts, actually. I think it's going to be...
I think it's in process of being taped now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's being taped right now. So I believe it's going to be out in January or February.
Yeah, I was just going to say probably it'd be after the first of the year, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a good one. Did you also hear about the story about Hulk Hogan's mother's caregiver?
Yes.
This is a weird story. It's like the longtime caregiver for Hogan's mom is suing the Tampa Police Department for more than $15,000, claiming he was falsely arrested for stealing money from her. supposedly he was accused of stealing like $25,000 from her ATM card, and the charges were dropped a little bit later on. Detectives eventually accused one of Hogan's family members. So the suit also alleges that Terry Bollea made statements that led police to believe that he stole the money, and Bollea gave the detective an autograph during the investigation.
Oh,
stuff like that.
Whatever.
Things like
whatever.
That. So, you know, this is another thing we're going to be hearing about it, and we may even see it on Hogan Knows Best. Who knows?
Oh, okay. Well, then his mommy can be on there, too.
Huh? Yeah.
We'll do a job for her. All right. Whatever works.
So what else has been going on this
week? The Dudleys signed with TNA. All right. The former Dudleys. Yes. The artist formerly known as Dudleys.
Yes. With TNA. That's going to be... I know they're going to be on the first show.
They're committed for at least a year, anyway.
Really?
From what I understand.
Cool.
And I guess Walton has surfaced, has spoken with them, but as of yet, I have no idea where he was, why he was, if he was, or whatever.
Or if anybody's going to find out.
So, anyway, yeah, well, you know, this is, it'll be not tomorrow night, but a week from tomorrow night is when all the big guns come out.
Yes.
Yes.
The WWE Homecoming. And October 1st is going to be the first TNA show.
Right.
So it's going to be a good weekend.
And, of course, that show will be replayed on Monday night the 3rd. At midnight, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe that's the time.
And then the UFC reality show and plus some fights. And it's staggering. It's staggering.
It really is. Really is.
Exactly.
Let's go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to find out who won the pay-per-view prediction game that we played last week.
All right, great.
So let's do that. We're at Doc Young and Les Thatcher here on Wrestling Weekly. We're going to be right back after this with pay-per-view prediction game and the results. We're going to find out who won.
You're listening to WrestlingWeekly.com. We always have the scoop on the inside of professional wrestling.
Don't listen to me, people! You can find out for yourself right now at home!
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Now, last week, Les, we played a little game, the pay-per-view prediction game, where, you know, sense doesn't always matter in this game.
And the results are in.
The results are in, and, Les, let's just say you kicked my butt.
All right. Let's say that, but let's go down.
We will. But, like, two pay-per-views ago, I got all of them right.
Uh-huh.
And now this time, I didn't do all that well. We'll start off with... Shelton Benjamin and Curran White. Shelton Benjamin did beat Curran White, and that was a point for you.
Okay.
I did not. I kind of thought that Curran White was going to need the push. You had said that Curran White is kind of one of those characters that doesn't need a belt. It's not going to get a belt. Doesn't really need a push, and Shelton Benjamin was going to go over because he's the one that needs it. So you were right on that one.
I'm right once in a while, whether I need it or not.
Once in a while, yeah.
Okay.
Now, this one you didn't really give a prediction for. We were talking about Trish Stratus and Ashley versus Victoria and Tori. You said it could go either way, actually.
Yeah.
I went with Trish and Ashley. I got a point for that one.
Okay.
Kayden Murdoch against the World Tag Team Champions, the former ones now.
Right.
The Hurricane and Rosie. Kayden Murdoch got that victory. We both got a point for that because... we both picked Kayden Murdoch. That was a gimme.
So we're two up at this point. It's tight.
Yes.
Okay.
The Big Show defeated Snitsky. We each got a point for that one. It was Big Show. It was an easy pick. Easy pick.
Okay.
Matt Hardy defeated Edge. And I was actually surprised that you went with Matt Hardy But you did. I also went with Matt Hardy. We both got a point for that one. Shawn Michaels beat Chris Masters, and here's where it gets crazy. Because I don't know why, but I went with Masters.
I don't know why either.
You went with Shawn Michaels, and you got the point for that. Ric Flair beat Carlito to become the Intercontinental Champion.
Yes.
And that was a point for you. I picked Carlito to win.
Right, okay.
And Kurt Angle defeated John Cena by DQ only. He didn't get the belt, but he did defeat him. And we did both predict Kurt Angle would win the match. Now, you know, it got me to thinking, does that count as a point because Kurt Angle did win? Or does it count as no point because he didn't win the belt? And we both really did think he would win the belt. But you know
whatever
me.
Whatever you say, Doc.
You know me. I love points. So we each got a point for that.
Okay.
which puts you up...
7-6.
Yes. Yes. So, less wins this time.
Well, it was close, Doc.
It was close.
Mom, it was a tough fight, but I beat him. Yeah, okay. Well, you know, it's... I'd had this conversation about the younger guys working with the veterans,
right.
Somebody was a little upset that the veterans were going over. Well, that's which it does it makes sense, you know, a veteran team who's more experienced in the pressures of the game at that level, you know, has that in their favor.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you know, like now that. Benoit, I know, has been beating poor Orlando Jordan in less than a minute. And even if he continues to do that a couple times, he's by him wearing the belt and by him going over, it's going to establish the belt, the U.S. belt, as something.
Right.
Now, Jordan can win it back in some devious manner with help from JBL or whatever the situation. It'll mean more when he gets it back. And if he gets the push that's equal, then he will mean more, right?
Absolutely.
Masters probably learned more in the 20 minutes he spent in the ring with Michaels than he's learned in 20 days. The same goes Batista is going to work with Guerrero. Angle is going to work with Cena. Angle is not a veteran in terms of years like these other guys, but he certainly is in terms of his maturity, you know, his in-ring work. And it's an education. Now, you put Carlito working with Flair. You put Carlito and Cena against one another, or Cena and Batista against one another. You've got guys who are still learning. Well, I mean, you never stop learning this business, but guys who aren't seasoned veterans. That's the point I should make. All right, doesn't mean they're going to have a horrible match. Doesn't mean it's going to stink the joint out. But it does mean it's probably be a notch or two below what is acceptable by the masses at that level. You know, so this is another way of shoring up your... You know, as we were talking about with Dave, Lashley's, you know, they've got guys that they're going to push too hard. That's one of the things that they do that aren't ready. But the point is, if you can spread those guys out and cover their weak spots with the Benoits, Guerreros, Angles, and on and on and on, then that makes your whole product overall better.
Yeah.
And it's plus, you know, again, that's like going out there and playing a football game with a seasoned veteran across, you know, who can show you your mistakes, and that's exactly what these guys are needing. You know, they have to put them with one another is not the key.
Who else would you see that needs to probably work with a somebody who's more seasoned?
Some seasoning. Mm-hmm. The tag division. First of all, when you put M&M out there, that's probably they and Murdoch and Cade are probably your two hottest teams right at this point. And to me, when they put M&M out there, I don't care if it is Guerrero. Well, basically it's Batista beating them both because Eddie was selling his upset stomach or food poisoning or whatever the hell it was.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't do your team any good. You know, it's like putting Nunzio out there with Batista. Batista's push is the champion. Nunzio is a cruiser champion, but he's not, nobody, you know, they don't give him that kind of respect or prestige in terms of his appearance. So when they put him out there with Batista, and Batista just barely, you know, just lets him have a little offense, and it beats him like a poor brother. It doesn't do anything. You know, you're hurting those that division. I think, now what they are doing is smart. They're having Animal and Heidenreich squash guys outside that aren't under contract.
Mm-hmm.
So that way they're not beating these other guys. But you know, it's the way they're using the talent. It's just there's a lot. It could be, you know, they could have a lot stronger. The one thing I don't like about Kennedy's finish is that now if he can beat you down, put you on his shoulders in that fireman carry position, and go to the second rope, then I like it.
Mm-hmm.
If he can't do that, then after you watch him long enough, if you have any sense whatsoever, guess what? You yourself don't ever go to the top, so you take his finish away from him.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but if he can't, that means everybody, even guys who normally don't use the top, have to find a reason to be there.
Right.
So you don't, you're right, okay. But you see where I'm going with that?
Uh-huh. I mean,
that's why it lacks validity to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like the horse JBL and the horse distracting Ray to the point that he was going to get beat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever.
Who knows?
What?
Who knows?
Exactly, exactly.
So what do you got coming up, Les?
Well, we're going to Tulsa with CWE next month, October the 15th.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be
good. Yeah, UnitedChampions.com. And, man, you talk about it. Now, I'm not sure of all the matches, but Matt Morgan's going to be there, Charlie Haas, Steve Dr. Death Williams going to be there, Jimmy Cornette's on the card. Main event is AJ Styles versus Petey Williams versus Jimmy Yang.
Excellent.
And then my Matt, I say my Matt Stryker, the one that I train, not the one that signed to WWE.
Right.
Stryker. Yeah, and Jarrell Clark and Matt Sydal and, gosh, I'm not sure who all. But you can check it all out at UnitingChampions.com.
Cool.
UnitingChampions.com. Then November 11, 12, and 13, Dr. Tom and I are doing a three-day camp along with one of the original Four Horsemen. Tully Blanchard is going to help us in the Spindale, Rutherfordton, North Carolina area at the RS Middle School gym. And you can find out all the information on these camps I'm talking about by going on our website, epwt.com, and there's links to where to sign up or to get more information from those particular promoters. And then December 1, 2, and 3, we are in West Liberty, Kentucky for Retro Wrestling Alliance, and that's rwaonline.biz, and you can sign up for that one. And what else are we doing? Gosh, right now I think that pretty much covers
you
the show. It gets us through the year, doesn't it?
You got a busy plate.
Yeah.
As far as these the training camps and stuff. Now, let's say that I'm an up-and-coming wrestler. You know, I've done a couple indies, and I want to go to one of your training camps. What can I expect?
You expect to get, well, you know, we work with everybody at their level.
Mm-hmm.
If there's big turnouts, big crowd, like for sure in the North Carolina one in November, we will be using two rings. So if indeed we have a handful of beginners, in other words, this would be their first time in the ring, we will separate the advanced. Everybody from a year or less will be in, say, in A ring, and B ring will be the people of a year or more experience. And then Dr. Tom and Tully and I will switch back and forth between the rings, so everybody gets to work with everybody. And hopefully by the end of the 3 days, we have ranked beginners doing something. You know, we expedite. I mean, they're not ready to wrestle or have a match in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
No, there is no such animal, believe
right.
me. But a lot of the indie, you know, here's the deal. Today, in today's business, a lot of the indie guys are self-taught or taught by young guys who were taught by somebody. You know what I'm saying? They haven't. So a lot of the things we build on are psychology, the minor, the details that make the big things work, facial expression, body language, not how to do a hold so much as why. Where does it fit? Where does it? You know, we put the people training in little mythical situations, and you know, to see how they deal with it, to see how they handle it. Everything we do is to prepare you to be a better performer. And if you have the visual, if you have the look, if you have the talent to possibly get a tryout with one of the big companies. We've had people out of these camps where we've recommended them. Dr. Tom still speaks to the company he was employed by. I still have connections there to talk to, you know, and we've had some guys and girls, to get tryouts, which, I mean, don't get me wrong, don't come because this is a guarantee. I'm like, somebody in WWE or somebody in TNA is going to look at me. That's not true.
Right.
You know, but it's all about, you know, if you are a small promoter, you want to come if you get the right things. You know, the idea is to make, let's say you have a small promotion, Doc. We make your indie guys, we make your roster better. If you have a trainer, if we highly, recommend that they train with us too, the trainers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're young guys, then they're still learning.
Right.
You know, so if we make your trainers better, make your talent better, then it makes you, your company better, makes your show better. And it gives these guys, what we're teaching is what it's going to take you to get a tryout at one of the WWE Invitational camps, or everybody can't just walk in at Deep South or at OVW and say, hey, well, I want to be a wrestler and plop down their money, because, that's just not the case.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, what we teach are the fundamentals, the basics of sound principles, psychology. And again, we train at your level. We have no set curriculum or no set schedule on how we run those three-day camps. It all comes down to the people involved and at what level they're at, and that's where we apply our teaching.
Sounds good. EPWT.com is the website. It's all the information's there on all the upcoming camps.
Yeah, and, I told you I was reading Dylan's book,
mm-hmm.
and then Cam West, publishers out of Toronto, are putting out Pain and Passion, The History of Stampede Wrestling by Heath McCoy. And Heath himself is a writer with the Calgary newspaper, and this book will be out mid-October, I think. So anyway, I'm reading that now, and let me tell you, so far I'm glued to it, but I'm going through both these. Both are good reads.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have JJ back on once I get done with that. And Heath McCoy, the publishers have said that, you know, he'd be happy to do anything we'd like to do with him too. And I think that would be, because he grew up a wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
And so he writes this from his experiences. Plus, you know, he did a lot of research. But it's just a very good read. It's one of those things you don't want to put down.
Sounds good.
And well worth the time.
And a rich history.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It does not pull any punches. It's not, you know, pro wrestling. It's not con. It's not to put Stampede over or to bury it. It's just what he has researched from interviews and his own, experiences.
So there's good and bad in it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just like there is in life, right?
Exactly.
Yay.
Let's go ahead and take a break, and let's get Mick Foley on. Let's do that.
All right.
Get to our featured guests. We're going to take a break, guys. We'll be right back after this on Wrestling Weekly. It's Doc Young and Les Thatcher. Mick Foley, the man, the myth, the legend, coming up.
You're listening to WrestlingWeekly.com. We always have the scoop on the inside of professional wrestling.
Don't listen to me, people. You can find out for yourself right now at home.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. We've got our featured guest on the line, the man, the myth, the legend, the hardcore icon, Mick Foley. Mick, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, it's nice to be on with you guys.
I really, really appreciate it. What's been going on lately?
Man, well, I've been busy finishing up the great Scooter 2005 book tour. But I just got off the road. I guess we did 8 dates, including. But I got to work in a couple of fun things. I got to see a San Francisco Giants game in San Francisco. I got to see a Kansas City Royals game in Kansas City, and just did a signing in Kansas City yesterday at the Negro League Baseball Hall of Fame, which was a big deal to me. So we've officially finished all the bookstores, and now I just have a few last signings at some cool places.
And for the young guys who aren't really indoctrinated into baseball, explain to them that Scooter was the second best shortstop in Greater New York at that time.
Who are you going with? Pee-wee Reese is the best?
Pee-wee Reese, yes.
You're not going with Buddy Harrelson, huh? Phil, it's about a kid named after Yankee great Phil Rizzuto, whose nickname was the Scooter, and this boy grows up wondering why his dad liked Phil Rizzuto so much he couldn't have named him Phil, but his name is Scooter, and he's kind of growing up in the Bronx at a time when both the borough of the Bronx and the Yankee dynasty were crumbling. So it might be considered by some standards a historical novel, and it's nice that some reviewers have noticed that I've really got some solid history in there.
And does the character kind of have some of your childhood traits and some of your remembrances from your from being a baseball fan?
Yeah, well, a lot of it is based on being a fan and the memories, of going to the games that the game evokes. And there's something about baseball, I don't care how big a football fan somebody is, it's just not the same feeling when you walk out into that big, green, expanse and become a kid again. I don't think people come to football games, to feel like a kid. I mean, they go there to root on their teams and get rowdy. Have a great time, but I know you're a Cincinnati guy, so you're probably familiar with Sean Casey, right?
Sure.
I was at Shea Stadium earlier this year, and Sean had a heck of a day, went 5 for 5, and his first hit, I believe, was a single, and he's on first base, and my son says, "Dad, I think Sean Casey is, trying to get your attention," and he was essentially, non-verbally going, "Did you see that hit?" Putting up his thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And so even when he was hitting had his home run and he was running around the base, he was checking with me to see if I saw it. And I mean, to me, that's awesome. When I'm there, I'm not the hardcore legend. I'm a kid again. So,
right.
In some ways, the book is drawing upon the way the game made me feel. And, you might be able to appreciate less when Scooter gets a little older, when he gets his way into high school, because the story takes him from the time he's 4 until he's 18. When he walks out on that athletic field with the shoulder-length hair and the work boots, the red and black flannel shirt, and the set of pants, that's essentially me walking out of the field. So, I figure, with the last book I did, Tietam Brown, I gave the kid the missing ear because so many people ask me about the ear,
Right.
Even yesterday, can I see the ear? So I thought, well, that's an interesting, physical trait that kind of becomes a character trait, 11 years after the fact, and maybe I'll give my kid, the same things that people find interesting. Not that love handles are interesting, but, I gotta make the guy close to me so it feels real. It's kind of like being in the ring, you have to suspend disbelief, and if you're writing and you're believing, then it's that much easier to,
Sure. You're talking about how if you're really into baseball, and I started playing organized baseball when I was 7 years old, and I'll tell you the neatest thing for me, I played in a Cub Scout All-Star game where I was the first baseman for the East team, and a guy who was a fair country quarterback by the name of Staubach.
Oh, no kidding.
Was an outfielder for the West team, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Exactly.
That is interesting. You know, I wish I did not know that Dusty Rhodes was a good college baseball player. I'm sure, you know, Dusty over the last, you know, several decades has been asked primarily about, you know, wrestling.
Sure.
And I don't know if I've had a conversation with Dusty outside of, you know, wrestling and, you know, how his kids are doing. It would have been cool to talk to somebody like the Dream about baseball and then, you know, give him a book and see how he
Help
about it. I know that J.J. Dillon's a huge, you know, fan of baseball history, so I got him a copy. And, you know, I haven't heard any feedback, but I'm assuming. I'm just, you know, I'm going completely under the assumption that everybody likes this book, you know.
Yeah.
As you know, Les, I was at your house at the last the last book tour, and that happened to be a huge event there in Cincinnati. They'd really done a good job promoting
yeah.
it. And then I made the mistake of looking at what people, you know, in the, you know, critical community were saying about the book, and I got dogged a couple times. And you know what? If you're writing, it's kind of like the closest thing to giving birth that a guy can experience. Because if you finish a novel, you've actually, like, conceived the idea, given birth to it, you know, nurtured it. And when someone criticizes it, it's almost like they're telling you that your kid is ugly. And so I was over your house when I read a couple of those things, and you could tell that it bothered me.
Yes.
So my feeling is, you know, there's nothing I can do about it now. A lot of authors, you know, who not only sold a lot of books but are very well respected, have read this and liked it. And people in the game of baseball have read it and liked it. So, you know, that's good enough for me. And if somebody out there doesn't like it, you know, I can handle that in the future. But as long as I'm on the tour, I'm staying positive and just going under the assumption that everything's cool.
You know, Sean Casey, I meant to tell you, when I had the contract with training the WWE guys, Sean brought his wife.
That's right, he came down, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The funny thing is, he got Queeley, Alan Funk, and because they stationed you, Mr. Thatcher, do you mind if we stay and watch the prayer? I said, no, make yourselves at home. Are you sure we're not going to destroy? I said, no, you know, relax and make yourself at home. Anyway, Alan came to him and he said, do you think we could work Sean into some little drill or something before we go? And I said, yeah, let's do that, because he and Graves came to the 2000 film and we did at the Xavier Fieldhouse.
No, and the other, the third musketeer in that group was Dimitri Young, who's
yeah.
now at the...
He's with Detroit now.
Uh-oh.
Okay, uh-oh.
Oh, there he is.
Everything okay?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, he's with Detroit now. Dimitri.
Yeah, yeah, and I met him at the All-Star game.
He's a big man. He knew history. He had, Dimitri had dinner with Shane Douglas and Benoit and I.
Oh, did he?
And he talked chapter and verse about wrestling. Well, yeah, I was going to tell you, anyway, I said to Casey, would you like to get in and do something? And it just, his eyes were like Christmas tree lights.
It's funny, yeah. I was telling my dad that I just went to the Casey Royals game, and I got a friend on the Royals named Denny Hocking, who's one of my favorite players, despite the fact, you know, that he's a... You know, he's a utility player, real solid, but he's kind of up and down in the minors and, you know, was on the Twins when they won the division.
Right.
And a good guy and big wrestling fan. I was there to you know, to watch the Royals, and it turned out Bob Wickman of the Indians saw me up on the board. You know, they just put me up there. And so he sent a ball over, and they had me come into the Indians' dressing room. And Travis... Hapner is having a, you know, tremendous season.
Right.
And I told my dad, this guy's like third in the running for MVP, but he was like a kid sitting there, you know, in the dressing room asking me the, you know, the wrestling questions.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
With eyes wide open. So it's funny that, you know, the same way that baseball makes me feel is apparently how wrestling makes some of these guys feel.
I'll tell you, one of the funniest pictures that you got to envision this is Blackjack Mulligan, 6'9", 300-plus.
Right.
And Willie Nelson, who's about 5'6" and a half, right?
Right, right.
And Willie's Willie's marking out for Jack, and Jack's marking out for Willie.
Yeah, it's just nice when it's a two-way street like
yeah.
that.
Oh, yeah, Jack's just shrunk down to he's 5'5", looking up and saying, yes, sir, Mr. Nelson.
Yeah, I remember, I think Bill Watts brought up the point that, you know, he was a little critical, you know, when Vince started bringing in his celebrities. And Watts' point was, hey, celebrities have always come to the matches.
Yes.
You know, but we didn't used to pay them to do it. You know, like, they came because they liked what we did. And still, you know, to this day, you know, you see people showing up backstage. And, you know, The Rock seemed to, like, even when The Rock was in his first year or second year, he seemed to know everybody. He'd be like, yeah, man, I want to meet a friend of mine, Dan Marino. Like, all the guys from the music world, they just gravitate towards The Rock. But it is one of the perks, I guess, is that you meet some people who do stuff that you like.
Yeah. You remember Bobby Goldsboro?
Yes.
He was a big wrestling fan.
Now, what was the what was his big song there?
Oh, now if you hadn't have asked me, I would have told you. he used to go to the matches at the Farm Center in Dothan.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
But, you know, Goldsboro didn't have that, like, rugged cachet with the wrestling fans.
No.
So he sang it was, like, a sensitive song, wasn't it? It was a country station.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But he was, big on Gulf Coast. He talked about Mario Galento and Ken Lucas and the whole nine yards. Yeah, that, you know, yeah, you're right, though. It's a two-way street. Everybody's a mark for somebody.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I always resented the word mark because it always kind of gave the feeling that if somebody liked what you did, there had to be something wrong with them. You know what I mean? Like, what a mark.
But I think any of us that have immersed ourselves into this business, any of our success comes from basically we're still marks.
Oh, sure, sure. That's what I'll tell you. If somebody, one of the younger wrestlers, says, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be a mark. I'm like, hey, you know, I wouldn't be in it if I hadn't been one, and, you know, wouldn't watch it if I still, you know, wasn't one.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Have you been keeping up since you've been going with the WWE and what's going on there?
Yeah, I don't keep up every week, but now they've got TiVo, you know, which is, like, it's like my first step into the technical world.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I feel like the importance I've mastered the TiVo. I am able to watch it, and, I mean, it's terrible to say, but I'm able to, you know, to fast forward through some of the matches in order to keep up on what's going on angle-wise. So,
right.
As you know, I've got a return date with WWE, and I want to, you know, at least be in the thick of it. And the truth is, when I'm on, the, you know, these book tours, it coming as no surprise that not every question I get is a book question.
Right.
You know, and you know, to their credit, the people come to the book saying they try hard. You know, they do ask some good questions about, you know, character development and inspiration for ideas. But a lot of them want to know what I think of the current product. So I do try to keep up with it so that I don't seem like a complete idiot when I'm out.
Right. So are you excited about next week? It's a big day.
Yeah. It's a huge thing. I don't know how they're going to cram all this into, what do they have, 7 hours that night?
Something like that.
It's a long show.
The old bandstand, Dick Clark, you know, you follow by High Mick Foley, 37, Rockford High School.
Good beat, and you could dance to it.
You know what? The big dilemma we had is that they really, you know, I mean, I'm flattered. They really wanted me there. And you know, when they start throwing my name in there, like, as one of the big returns along with, you know, Austin and Vince and Hogan, that's pretty good company there, you know.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I'll go out on a limb and say I didn't draw, you know, near as money, though, and those guys did, nor was I nearly as important a figure in the business. But for some reason, you know, hey, if the fans think I'm in that category, then, you know, who am I to say I'm not? So they thought it was really important that I be there, and I'm like, man, I've got to be in Australia. And we spent a lot of time trying to figure out how a guy could be in two places at once, especially when they were about 12,000 miles apart.
Right.
But I am able to catch a flight out right after I'm on and get out to L.A. and then work my way to Australia in time for that tour.
Well, you know, I'm just making a joke when I say this, but if for some reason that October 3rd Raw just tanked and didn't do any numbers, who's going to stand up and take the place?
Oh, I know. Yeah. You know, maybe I'd take a bullet for the team. I'd say, you know what? It was me. I don't connect with the audience anymore. Hulk, it wasn't you, buddy. Austin, no, it was me.
I should have been on so early.
One of the great humorists, Mick, you would have loved him if he had been around at when you were in the business. Luther Lindsay, with a dry, you know, with just a straight face, would say, you know, somebody would start saying about a house and why it didn't draw. Luther said, just check the chapter 3 in the book of why the houses didn't draw, and you'll see that tonight is the same day that Seal Test puts out their flavor of the month. That's where everybody is at.
There's always a reason. It reminds me of the guy who would go out and not get, you know, a guy would be a heel working, not get a peep of a reaction, and come back and tell you he had that silent heat out there. I had that silent heat.
Have you read Terry Funk's book yet?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was great, you know, and I think, like, the first half of it reads like a tremendous action-adventure story, and then he gets real specific about wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it, you know, I just think his insight is incredible, and I think, and I'm pretty easy as far as, you know, being critical on the other wrestling books, because some people have been rough on some of them, but there's not been one that I haven't enjoyed to some extent, you know, but it just seemed to me that Terry really put a lot of thought into it, and I know in some cases, you know, a guy is thrown together with a writer, and they don't know each other, and they only spend a few days on the road together. I don't know what the relationship was with Terry and the guy who helped him out on it, but I would bet it was pretty close,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it seemed like Terry put a lot of thought into what he said. It wasn't just a guy riding down the road, you know, just, you know, talking off the cuff. Yeah, I can't recommend that strongly enough, and I think it should be, like, required reading for any younger wrestler.
And you know, Terry has always been a visionary. He's always called things are going to happen in this business way ahead of them.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, after seeing him in Florida, because I hadn't seen him as a heel in a long time, I'll go on record saying he's the best heel in the business. As far as, I was shocked at how effective he was and how believable, to the point when he was cussing out the, ring announcer, the young lady. I said, I'd get out of here if I was you, you know. Like, he just loses himself in the role. I was going to call him and just tell him that it was, you know, awesome performance he put on.
Well, while we're on the subject of WWE and coming back, you decided at the last minute, I guess, or something helped you make the decision to go back to WWE, but you were like just a hair away from signing with TNA, right?
Yeah, I was really close. I guess some people in Panda thought I was playing them. But the truth is the WWE offer had always been better. And it was a thing where, I mean, like 4 or 5 months ago, you know, they contacted me about doing the ECW thing. And then I said, hey, why don't we put together like a real loose contract so that if I knew I had, you know, say 2 matches coming up in a year, then I wouldn't let my weight, you know, get so out of control, which is, you know, obviously been a problem for me. And also be like a steady thing coming in, and it just seemed like it made perfect sense. And even the meeting I had with Vince and Kevin Dunn was like 15 minutes long, because everything just said, yeah, this is a no-brainer, you know, where, you know, we get make it a little more formal, but it's not a full-time thing. Blame it on Raven. You know, it's all Raven's fault. He put it into my head that, you know, if I could help, you know, this TNA, you know, get off the ground, that it would, he said, you know, dwarf anything I'd ever done in the business. And I really started thinking, man, that I might be the difference between guys, you know, eating or starving. Maybe that's, you know, putting myself on too much of a pedestal there, and it's probably not completely true, but, I do think I could have been a big boost.
I think you would have made a measurable difference, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what, I really hope those guys do well so I don't have to feel guilt about it. And I did convince myself, and rightfully so, I believe, that a successful TNA would actually be the best thing that could happen to Vince. because I know Vince a little bit, and I know how well he responds to pressure. Although when I presented that idea to him, it didn't go over very well. And I went back after I decided, to stay with WWE or to take, that offer. And somebody had Foley as good at one of my book signings. I read one of the last few pages before I went into Parents Television Council analysis.
Right.
And, I read what I wrote about Vince, wondering what would have happened if he hadn't come along. And I said pretty much, I would have, I would have taken a job at, been boosted up to 3,500 for a tour for, IWA and spent, 180 days over there making 55 grand and more or less, what a good custodian makes in a public high school, and I would have really been paying a price for it if WCW had made an offer. Based on my past with them, it wouldn't have been a really good role, and I would have been out of the business, a few years later, or just kind of on the fringes of the business, and been torn apart and burned and beaten up, and wouldn't have had nearly the things that I've been given. So I do think in some sense that even though it was a two-way street and I certainly, took care of my role, that maybe I wasn't giving him enough credit for the role that his decisions played in, in my success.
Mm-hmm.
That was a long, rambling sentence, huh?
No, that's okay.
Those of you listening, books read a lot better than this.
But, if you told somebody, the books read a lot better. I have an editor for that who can say, hey, it's a long, rambling sentence in there. But I think if you said to somebody, if you put the figures out there and said, okay, so wait a second, you were going to do more work with more pressure for half the money and burn a bridge with the guy who helped make you, that they'd think I was crazy. But I really did, I liked a lot of the guys in TNA and still like them. I think they work hard and they're good guys, and they deserve a break. And thinking that I could have helped them was something that I, took seriously.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get to some chat room questions if you're ready.
Wait a minute. Let me
sure, go ahead, Les.
One thing, did the fact, though, that you were able to work the deal out with WWE where you can still go out and freelance in terms of promoting your book and promoting yourself to a certain degree, I kind of feel that probably had, like, gives you that some freedom that you didn't have.
I mean, that was, they really showed me they wanted me by allowing me that freedom. Now, the one thing I can't do at independent shows, which is actually, I think, a positive.
Right.
Because, Les, you've seen me as a special guest referee, and I'm good, but I'm not that good. Like, once you see me guest referee one time, there's really not that much incentive to go out there and see it again. And so I really thought, my run out there on the indies, was probably not at an end, but I didn't want to be the guy like saying, okay, what if I come in for, 500 less? And I tell you the truth, I felt funny going out there and doing gimmicks, because my feeling was, people would say, yeah, has this guy done okay without my money? And I always tried to donate, to donate it to a good cause, and most of the time I did, but you have that mentality that, man, how can I sit in the dressing room when there's money to be made? And, it's hard to shake that. So it is a relief to not need to go out there and say, hey, okay, how many indies do I need? How many college speeches do I need? And so that anything extra is gravy, but I can do extra things. For example, the Tatum Brown, it looks like it's going to be has a good chance of being made into a movie, and that's a deal I can do by myself, which doesn't mean it's a Hollywood blockbuster. Anyone who's read that material knows it's not exactly Will Smith's July 4th, material. But it's you know, it's a good story that I think some actors will really do justice to, and I like the idea that I can make that deal on my own.
Is it true that you're wanting Terry to be Dedham's father?
Yeah, he thinks I'm kidding around. I mentioned his book. He did go out and read it in one day and got back to me, and he said, "Cactus, I think I can do that role. It requires a little transformation, physical and emotional, but I think I can do that." And then I said it wasn't like Hollywood was beating down my door until, you know, this guy who had done, the guy, his name is Tim Bowie, and he's done a great film called Green Dragon, you know, which won't ring any bells because it was a very small film. He and his brother, I think, won an award at Cannes Film Festival with a movie called Three Seasons. And I liked his ability to tell stories, and I did tell him at a meeting that I'd like him to consider Terry Funk, and then he was like, "Oh, we were kind of thinking of Sean Penn," and it's kind of hard to push the Funker if they have an Academy Award guy who may be interested in it.
Right.
I'm not saying he isn't.
Sean's kind of the world former world champ of his business, like Terry is.
Yeah.
All right, let me ask you: you were going to wasn't it a Cyrus Radio a talk show you were going to do? Is that still in the works?
Yeah, well, with Cyrus or Sirius? Oh yeah, was it called Cyrus? You know what the truth is, Les? It was a lot. It would have been a lot of work. You know, I was trying to say, couldn't I do like a weekend show? And they said the way to build an audience, do it every day. And man, that's not only, you know, 4 hours a day, but it would have been, you know, an incredible amount of legwork. Like, I know some guys go on and they can go a long way with just the presentation. You know, and they can, you know, kind of bluster their way and bully guests and things like that. But, you know, when I said to them I wanted to present it like it was a learning experience for me, they were like, no, you can't present it like you don't know everything, you know. And also some of the subjects that really intrigued me, you know, were not going to be ratings winners. And so, you know, I took all that into consideration, and I just thought, man, that's way too much work. I like being on the radio, and it's, you know, flattering, you know, when I'll guest host or something, and I'll get feedback from people who are not wrestling fans, and they'll appreciate, you know, the work I've done, and
right.
I guess, you know, a little bit of, you know, I don't know if it's knowledge or just a different point of view that I bring to the table, but I just thought that'd be too much to handle for me.
Yeah. Okay, I want to get some questions now from the chat room. They're coming in like crazy.
Okay.
Chris B. wants to know what it's like commentating with Joey Styles at One Night Stand.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing. I kind of feel that way, the same way about One Night Stand as they do about, book feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to assume that it was good. You know, like, I don't even want to watch the show. But I got the feeling, you know, that it was good. I got positive feedback. And I think the most, you know, the thing I heard several times in the Joey heard several times was that people couldn't believe we'd never worked together. You know, we'd known each other, but we had not worked, you know, professionally. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, just trying to let the action, you know, speak for itself on a lot of occasions and, you know, not trying to, you know, one-up each other. Like, I understand that, you know, that Joey's got brings an incredible, incredible understanding of the business and of matches and psychology to it, and I thought I'd just chip in when I could.
Right. Rubber Duck wants to know, are you done wrestling, or will we one day see you in a lumberjack shirt with your hand in someone's mouth?
Well, you can pretty much see that at all my indies. You know? That was pretty much a no-brainer. You're going to see that at the end of the night. But yeah, this new contract will call for a couple of actual matches a year.
Cool. Excellent. Do you intend to write a third book about your life like you did with Have a Nice Day and Foley is Good?
No, but that doesn't mean I won't write a wrestling book.
Mm-hmm.
I think I talked one other time about the idea of taking Tony La Russa's idea of three nights in August, which is inside the mind of a baseball manager during the course of one three-game series, and applying that wrestling. And what I would like to do is get inside the mind of Vince McMahon for the few days prior to and during WrestleMania. And I think that's something that our fans would really enjoy and that I would enjoy doing.
That sounds like excellent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I see this, you know, this the title Maniac, you know, playing off the, or WrestleManiac or something like that,
mm-hmm.
inside the mind of Vince McMahon, you know, during wrestling's, you know, biggest showcase or something like that. And the nice, not the nice thing, but I think one of the things that make it intriguing is you have not only the mind, you know, being inside the mind of Vince McMahon, but you have the matchups and the stories, the players inside those matchups and the inside, not only storylines, but the inside stories as to what those that match means to each player.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be a good book and something different as well.
I think that would be,
that sounds great.
You know, because, I mean, let's face it, I think Terry Funk's book was great, and it was a must-read.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I've enjoyed a lot of the other ones, but, man, it's hard to bring something new to the table with every book, especially when so many of the guys that have books out, you know, don't have the benefit of 20 years of experience, to look back on. So this would be different, and, I'd do my part to make it exciting and well-written.
Mm-hmm. If you could play just one character, would it be Mankind, Dude Love, or Cactus Jack?
It'd probably be Cactus because it wouldn't require dressing up, and I think on some level the fans accept that, he and I are the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to make one return as Mankind just because it would be different. Nobody's seen him in, 6 years.
Mm-hmm. You had talked about in a prior interview before that if you had to pick your least favorite one, and you said that it was Dude Love.
Right.
Why is that?
You know what? The memory. All right. Let me preface this by saying the Summer of Love was a beautiful thing in 1997. But when it was November of 97 and I was dancing, trying to kill 27 minutes, working with Jim Neidhart in Kuwait. The dude had worn out his welcome. And I may be too rough on him because I did have a couple of really fun matches with Stone Cold when I was the evil corporate dude.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when I hear dude, I automatically think Kuwait, November 97.
But I think Cactus was closest to Mick Foley.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, in 99 when Mankind became the lovable, Mankind, that was fairly close to me, too. It was just a slightly goofier version of the old guy.
I love the story of the birth of Sacco. I love that story.
Hey, I read where Raven used Sacco at one of the hardcore homecomings.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, maybe he did. I do know that he asked me if that would be okay, it would be okay if he started using it. And I said, by all means, I consider that stuff an honor. You know, I think Dennis Knight, who we know is a Midian,
right,
asked me if he could start dropping the elbow off the ring apron, and I almost forced him to take it. Like, go ahead, by all means, I dropped an elbow off the ring apron in Ring of Honor. And even I was realized a mistake. And here is why you need to have a go-home line, because in my farewell address to the Ring of Honor people, I mentioned that I had helped them get into the building where we were wrestling that night.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and here's my big go-home line, right? After I've been there, just slightly over a year off and on, and I said, and if I had anything to do with you guys enjoying yourselves tonight, watching these great wrestlers, well, man, that just gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling all over.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, my God, I can't end on warm, fuzzy feeling. And then Prince Nana was in the ring, and I was panicking. I don't think fans realize, when you blow it and it's not a good feeling. And I was like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I was like, I'm going to go drop an elbow on this guy. As soon as I said it, I was like, oh, God, this is going to hurt. And I threw him outside and dropped the elbow and had trouble walking for a few days.
Oh, man. Agent Orange wants to know, he said he saw the movie Big Money Hustlers.
Right.
And he saw your part in that. He wanted to know about your experience doing that and if you ever considered an acting career.
Yeah, well, I was asked once to describe the difference between me and Rock, and I said, well, I really, I can sum it up by saying that Rock made $15 million for Walking Tall, and I made $3,000 for Big Money Hustlers. outside of that, no difference at all. I did like working on Big Money Hustlers, although it was very cold. But deep down, I don't really want to be an actor, and I think it's acting should be left to people who really want it. I guess I'm going to do an audition for an Ivan Reitman film. But it's just another, it's like another, you know, big, dumb bodyguard role. And not only do I not like auditioning for them, I don't even get them when I do audition for them. But I will be in the city. Ivan Reitman's a great director, and, you know, I might give that a shot. But by no means do I want to be an actor.
Crusher Cox wants to know if your son Dewey still watches WWE now that you're not in it.
He does, yeah, he watches, I'd say he watches an hour, you know, he probably watches every other week at least one of the shows, but I'd say he watches 1 or 2 hours of wrestling a week, so he's not obsessed like he once was.
Right.
And the truth is, we'd have more wrestling on in the house if it wasn't for the fact that I think Little Mick would like it, and, you know, I want to give him a couple more years before he catches on to what Dad used to do.
Yeah. Does, do we still have Dad all over the room?
No, no, and I'll tell you what, it's a hard day as a father when you come home and you realize something's different about your son's room, and
uh-huh.
That something is that your posters are down.
Who replaced you, Mick?
Yeah, baseball players.
Right.
So my stock was way down until the day Dewey found out that George Steinbrenner was a big fan. You could see me growing in stature and, you know, in front of his eyes.
Has little Mick been on a roller coaster with you yet?
He has not been on a single roller coaster, but he did go on a log flume. Little Mick, did you like the log flume ride at Dutch Wonderland? Mickey, did you like going on that water ride with Daddy? I don't know if you heard me say
yeah.
That. He really liked it. I've got a little picture in my wallet of his little, hey, a big smile on that little face. So, well, you know, I'm glad he doesn't like the big rides. Because as a dad and an amusement park guy, it's given me the ability to just kind of walk around and appreciate the surroundings. And, you know, I guess you could apply that as a lesson in general life as well. And I try to tell the wrestlers, you know, I don't mean to get all sappy on you guys, but when they say, you know, you got any advice, I try to tell them, you know, just to, you know, listen, the odds are against you guys. Try to enjoy the experience for what it is, because, I mean, you can get a guy who's worked indies that thinks it's the greatest thing in the world to go around and, you know, have guys cheer them, chant their name, and have some fun, and you get guys, I'd say for the most part, who let it really tear them up that they're not getting that big break. So Little Mick has taught me a little bit about life, so I can stop and really appreciate the experience without, you know, the nonstop thrills that coasters bring.
So actually, at this point, with the new contract and a limited schedule and with some freedom to do some creative things on your own, you're pretty well in the best damn shape you've been in your life, right?
You know, not physically, but I need to. You'll see, and you probably did see on ECW that apparently, if you work really hard and watch your weight and train, you will lose weight, and then by goodness, Les, as you might know, if you go back to the same lousy habits and stop working out, some of that weight's going to sneak back on. Time to, you know, reverse that process, hopefully, and, you know, learn from my mistakes. But yeah, from a peace of mind standpoint, it is a nice situation I'm in.
Great.
How was your experience over at Late Night with Conan O'Brien?
Well, this is like the fourth time I've been on, and it's always good.
Right.
You know, for the second of those four times, I followed Carolyn Ray, and she went overtime. So I was worried a little bit, but, you know, I guess Conan likes having me on, or else he wouldn't continue to do so. And, you know, it was a good time. I understand when I'm on that I can't really talk much about the book. Because, I mean, that to his audience, that would seem boring. So what you try to do is get people to kind of get to know you and like you, and therefore, if they are in a store. And from what I understand, Conan's audience is more of a reading audience than, you know, other late-night shows. And so, you know, you just try to, you know, get your name out there and have the, you know, the book mentioned once or twice so that if they're in a bookstore, they're more likely to pick it up. But I enjoyed it, and, you know, I thought it was a pretty good appearance.
What's funnier, an Al Snow rib or watching Dominic DiNucci come to the ring with tequila playing?
He didn't come to this time, did he, on the wrestler reunion?
I don't think
you're
so.
Talking about for the Mark Curtis Memorial.
Right.
You know what? That was a tremendous rib because, you know, that was a Shane Douglas special, and it was good. All the guys, you know, all the DiNucci guys had a nice laugh at Dominic's expense.
Here's a good one to end on. What wrestler do you see that has the most potential?
The most potential out of anybody, huh? Oh, man, that's tough.
Joe?
It would have to be a younger guy, right?
I would assume.
I hate giving answers because I'm not taking into consideration all the guys that are out there. You know, and I can't say a TNA guy because I did enough damage when I said I'd like to wrestle Samoa Joe on the... and by the time I gave the answer,
I'll play devil's advocate. I think if I were putting somebody out in front on TNA, if I were running TNA, he'd be the guy I'd be looking for, you know, long term down the stretch.
Yeah, you know, because it's, you know, I can understand the public's or people's hesitation with him, because when I first saw picture of him on their you know, DVD, I was like, what, that's their champ? You know, which is apparently, you know, probably the same way people thought about me, who were not WWE, that's their champ. And then he really grows on you, you know, and it doesn't take long, you know, usually within a match or two. And I think that's the way the TNA fans are going to be. And he is unusual, and it's a benefit in a lot of ways to have that you know, somewhat different physique. I think the Observer even pointed out that Trevor Murdoch could have a nice run as a kind of a cult figure because
sure.
He's got the great faces and the you know, and the bad body.
Yeah.
So he's imposing enough as a physical guy, but you do have to acquired taste.
Don't you find Joe, at his chronological age and with the number of years he spent in the business, probably more mature at that point than any young guy you've sat down with in a while?
Oh, you mean as far as attitude?
He's
got a great attitude.
Picture what he's out there to do.
Yeah, he knows. He does have a good idea of what he's trying to accomplish, and it's a shame that you know. I guess as a few months ago, he was actually thinking of, you know, calling it quit.
Yeah.
He was frustrated, and you know, everybody gets down, and you know, it is nice. It would be nice if there, you know, that company went so that guys like Joe, who certainly deserve to make a living in the business, can do so.
Here's a good question. I gotta ask this before we get off here. It's from
I can't end with a TNA TNA plot.
It's from
you know, Vince. You know, Vince is on. You know. Yeah, Vince is checking up on you guys.
He listens to Wrestling Weekly.
Ask Mick to give you a rundown of his stock options.
Yeah. this is from NTAF, and he asked if do you think there'll be any new real hardcore legends in the future, since being a hardcore wrestler isn't that special anymore?
Yeah, it'll be tough to do that, because it's kind of hard to make your name doing that. You know, because I don't know how I got that. You know, I don't know how I got the credit for that. If you know what's weird, if you look at it, and I think I've got it down to either three or four. I was only involved in either three or four matches. Now, there were a couple angles where I was bloodied up, but three or four matches where I was bleeding. And usually hardcore is synonymous, with blood.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we just did a good job at telling people I was a hardcore legend. I mean, it's, you know, there is a sense that if you repeat something often enough, people are going to believe it. And I definitely had the background to back it up. But, sorry, New England just won the game. That's another long, rambling answer. I don't think so, because I don't think people will have the avenue to be etched in people's minds as a hardcore legend.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nick, the book is called Scooter Guys. Check it out at all bookstores everywhere. It's available now. And Mick, I want to thank you for being on the show. I know it's been a long tour for you.
Yeah, but we have some fun stuff coming up when I finish up at the Baseball Hall of Fame, which is a big deal. And just want to say, for someone who is if somebody's steadfast against reading, obviously, Scooter's not so it's going to appeal to them. But I think if someone likes to read and approaches it with an open mind, and I don't have to tell wrestling fans, not to, judge a book by its cover. But I think even if they go in and say, okay, I liked his wrestling books, but I'm not really much of a fiction guy, I think if they give it a few pages that they will, find themselves rooting for Scooter, and that they'll see kind of like a nice blend of humor, graphic violence, weird sex, sensitive stuff as well.
Right.
Mick, my best to the wife and the family. And,
absolutely.
When you're going to be in this area, please give me a yell, and like always, I'll pay for lunch. Okay?
Ah, that's that. Like always. All right, you sold me on that. And hey, we'll get together with Sean Casey. I think you'd love it.
All right, very
good. All right, talk to you guys later.
Right, bye, Mick.
Take care.
Mick Foley here on Wrestling Weekly, the hardcore icon himself. What a great interview he is.
Yeah, Eddie's a great guy. There is a guy who has done more to erase the stigma of professional wrestlers just being stuck for an answer when you say hello.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean, who would have thought a wrestler's writing a book like this, and he wrote it longhand, and he did it in 6 weeks, and it reads this well, and then plus, the novels, the children's books, and everything else. Yeah, I mean, he's a very intelligent guy, and it also points out another important thing, that to become a good ring psychologist, a good talent in that ring, you have to be quick in your mind. I mean, you have to make snap judgments on the move out there.
Right. Friend.
And, yes, Mick is, I won't get into the particulars between Flair and Foley, but yeah, he's far more than a stunt man. He's got great, great psychology. Well, like when we were talking to BG James, Roadie, forget what they look like. He's got great timing, great psychology, cuts great promos, and he was talking about it here tonight, drawing the people in, making them be a part of what you're doing. That's the key.
So we got a little inside info there that Mick is going to be on early in the show.
Yes.
On Piper's Pit.
So he can head to Australia.
Yes. So now you guys know that. You got to make your bets at home. Say, I bet he's coming on early, and you can win some money thanks to Wrestling Weekly.
It should be interesting.
Yeah.
Next Saturday night, everybody sets their DVRs, VCRs, whatever, Rs.
Something Rs.
Yeah, if you're not going to be home, we'll be up to watch, Saturday night, doing it at home isn't, I don't have a lot going on at midnight or 11 o'clock on Saturday nights that I tape or anything. I'm going to, I think that's going to be part of it, or it was for me. It's not necessarily an unusual time for wrestling, but the Friday afternoons at 3 and then even at 4, there were times that show would be over and I'd think, well, I'm going to watch, I missed it already.
Yeah.
Because it's just an unusual time.
Right.
So,
I've done that myself.
Yeah. But the next few weeks will be interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be good for the show, too.
Yeah.
Next week, we've got Mick Foley's old tag team partner, running buddy, Mikey Whipwreck, is going to be on the show.
Yeah, okay, cool. We're going to try and get Gabe Sapolsky and Shannon Moore, and gosh, who knows. And then when I hit I'll try to get line us up some guys in Oklahoma when I'm out there on the 15th of next month, which is just a couple weeks away, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's going to be a good show over there at the CWE.
Absolutely. And this is Sunday night. There's no pay-per-views.
Yes. Finally.
But the season premiere of Desperate Housewives.
Oh, bless.
Well, you have your thing about watching the girls in lingerie matches, and Nicolette Sheridan is never mind.
Is your thing.
Or Terry sure.
Terry Hatcher's kind of my thing. I'll give you that.
Oh, whatever. Whatever.
Well, let's get out of here a couple minutes early.
It doesn't hurt us to get out. We've had a full show tonight. Dave
Meltron
for his first run on Hot Topic. And, of course, if you can tune in to Wrestling Observer and catch Mick on the back hour. And who did Dave say he's going to haul? And Mike Tenay. The professor, yes.
So check those guys out.
And we've got Mikey Whipwreck next week and probably have a second guest lineup you can check out at WrestlingWeekly.com to find out who that's going to be. And if you're interested in our seminars or what's going on with myself, you can go to LesThatcher.com or EPWT.com. And don't forget, our training manual is out and on the stands.
Yes. I want to thank WrestleTalk Radio for their help tonight. Also, don't forget, for all your wrestling needs, ObsessedWithWrestling.com is the place you want to be. For Les Thatcher, I'm Doc Young. We'll see you next week, guys. Good night.
You've been listening to Wrestling Weekly. Please join us again next Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern right here on WrestlingWeekly.com.